so important to say, okay, I know this person's soul. I love them. I may not understand the behavior, but let me stop and think about all the other things that are existing in their lives, their wants, their desires, their disappointments. How would I feel if I were them? Welcome to Spiritually Hungry.
I'm very excited. Today is a very special day. It's also your birthday. Happy birthday, Monica.
Well, thank you.
It's also publishing day for Tale of the Other Glove. So before you say anything—
It's book launch.
Book launch. Before you say anything, I want to ask all of our listeners to pause this snack and go to Amazon or wherever you buy your books and buy many, many copies for yourself and your family. It's an amazing and inspiring book that every child should have in their home.
It truly is a great gift. So buy it today, exactly, and give it during the holidays. And the illustrations
of the other glove.
Illustrations are wintry, and so it's like perfect for the season we're going to go into. And the book really segues into what we're going to talk about today, which is the power of empathy. And it's interesting because I remember when one of our daughters, Miriam, when she was younger, one day she came home from school and she's like, well, I don't know, you know, empathy, sympathy, what's the difference? Can you really cultivate it? And we got an interesting conversation. I thought, wow, for me, it's kind of just automatic that it's such a necessary characteristic to have. And I do believe that it can be grown and cultivated. And part of the impetus of writing Tale of the Other Glove was exactly that notion of you don't need to know somebody's story to be able to see them as human or feel their pain. You just need to be able to put yourself in their shoes, which is the hallmark of empathy, really. So I actually do want to go through explaining the difference between empathy, sympathy, and compassion, because I think when we organize them in our heads, then we have a better chance at offering it to other people. So empathy, in the most basic of terms, is the ability to understand and share the feelings of somebody else. And we can do this by imagining how we would feel if we were experiencing what we're witnessing. I know you like jokes, and I know you like SNL.
Only good jokes.
Well, the deep thoughts. I think everybody liked Deep Thoughts, yes. by Jack Handy. He said, before you criticize someone, you should walk a mile in their shoes. That way, when you criticize them, you're a mile away from them and you have their shoes.
That's very good. I forgot that one. Thank you for reminding me.
I know you're usually the funnier one. And empathy also in terms of relationships, because it's another big area of where I do my work and I focus, is that some of the biggest obstacles people have in a relationship is because, especially when they're fighting, they're never really wanting to put themselves in somebody else's shoes. Instead, they want you to see how they are feeling and for you to put yourself in their shoes. But we can never really ask that from somebody until we are able to offer that ourselves. And of course, for that to happen, we need to remove ego, especially when we feel heated and most under pressure. So recently I was looking into, because, you know, we're speaking in different platforms and promoting the book, and there's a difference between emotional versus cognitive empathy.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I think we do know that, but I never knew there was actually a terminology that defined it. Emotional empathy.
Because I thought empathy would necessarily be an emotion, but okay.
Emotional empathy refers to feeling what another person feels, while cognitive empathy is about understanding their perspective without necessarily sharing their emotional state. Both forms can be cultivated. So I think you actually—
Can you do that?
Well, yeah. So when I was looking, I wouldn't define it exactly like that. I remember when I started to work with couples at the beginning, I would feel so completely drained after, truly, because usually the fights are ugly. You know, a lot of things are thrown at each other. There's a lot of pain. It's deep. It goes on for a long time, those conversations. And I was like, okay, I need to figure out a way to be able to navigate this. So for me, and I wouldn't call it cognitive empathy, but I think empathy at its greatest when you can feel somebody's pain, but you don't get dragged down by it. And from that place, you're able to help elevate them and lift them up. And you can do that best when you feel their pain, but you don't become it. So I think that's maybe what they're saying cognitive empathy is that you fully do feel it, but you don't become it, right? And you use that to really understand them and say, okay, how can I be a source of inspiration or elevation? So do you remember, it's so cute. I think that's part of what I love about kids. You know, I just love kids. I think like Miriam loves dogs. but you remember when the kids were little and like you'd see a little two-year-old put their hands on the back of another two-year-old and like rub their back if they got a boo-boo or a scratch, or, you know, we're crying about something like that. Just, it's so beautiful and simple, but we tend to lose that aspect of ourselves as we get older because judgment comes in, and that's the thing that creates that space.
I think that's a really important point. I think, and sometimes I wonder if we judge people so that we don't have to feel empathetic, even though we know that's the right thing, or
well, it would require action then, and we often don't want to maybe make ourselves.
But by the way, I don't think it always necessitates. Sometimes it necessitates action, but not always.
Action, I mean, by stopping your narrative and your lens and saying, okay, I'm going to stop my day today, even if it's just to say a kind word. That is an action. That's what I mean by that. It doesn't have to be grand, and you know, but it's really pausing and saying, okay, although I feel like that I'm the center of my world, because the only thing we have access to consistently are our own thoughts and feelings. We don't have that access to somebody else's unless we take the time, right?
Well, what I was going to say is that, because I think empathy, it doesn't even have to be a word, doesn't have to manifest even in a word, but it is about stopping and being in a different state of emotions, right? And I wonder sometimes if the reason why we judge and therefore don't feel empathy is either because we're judgmental, which is probably my guess, that we're naturally judgmental, or that we judge that we don't have to feel empathy. And I think that's sometimes true. And I think often in closer relationships, the second is probably more prevalent, which is that when a couple is having an argument, they don't want to be empathetic because they feel, look, I need to get my point across. Whereas I think maybe it's easier if we're looking out into the world and we see others in pain to allow ourselves to feel empathetic. And the reason we might not is because our nature just is judgmental. And therefore, that is an initial barrier to feeling
empathetic. Yeah, and I think people don't want to see themselves like that, but that is the truth. I mean, we always have a choice in any given moment, whether we meet a stranger or we're in a relationship. You can see them in relation to your own desires, your own wants and needs, which is really, if we're honest, that's how most of us navigate our days and the world, really. Or you can regard them as being like you, someone who longs for happiness and yearns to be free from pain, because we all experience those things and they're universal. And if we really thought about it, we could say, okay, if we talk about these things, this is a point of connection, actually, rather than separation. You have the choice in those moments to either open up or close off. And the other thing is, we really never know somebody's backstory. I mean, I always try to practice benefit of the doubt, especially if I'm feeling upset by something, say, okay, well, this person that's upset me, you know, what happened to them, either in their childhood, or if I see a bully or a behavior that's just unbearable and unacceptable, really, how did they become this way? Without judgment, really just out of curiosity. And then you can always find place in your heart for even love, I would say, even for somebody who's causing pain, right? I mean, I know this is a more elevated state of that, but it's possible. And when you do, you actually are able to release any pain you're feeling by that person causing you pain, because now you've seen them as human and just like you, even if their behavior is atrocious.
You might still be upset, right? You might still be upset.
It's a process. And I think that the more I'm feeling upset and that I have no influence on the outcome or the behavior of this person, I'm actually able to practice this more because nothing else is working, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I would say at least it saves you from completely othering the other person, which is like, you know, he or she is completely an evil, bad, negative person. Almost nobody is, right?
Almost.
Even if they behave in a negative way, and right, we all do at times, right? Stopping and saying, no, there must be a reason behind it. The reason might be a bad reason, right? Or it might be a good reason, but it doesn't even matter, because good reason or bad, they shouldn't be behaving in that way, but it gives you a closeness.
Well, we had this talk about somebody recently who, you know, and this is life, right? We change. We go in different phases and stages, but they're kind of unrecognizable at the moment. But then their behavior recently was very reminiscent of the person that I knew and still love, but don't see very often. And it's confusing. You're like, wait, what, you know? And you said something I thought was really interesting. And I think it's a really great awareness for each of us to have ourselves. You said, well, what do you think that person that you knew way back when that was really compassionate and kind, what would that version of that person think of themselves today? I was like, damn, because it's a really good point, you know? And I think it's a good way to check kind of in which way we are growing. Is it backwards or is it forwards? And this is a really kind of pause moment and say, okay, well, what is the version of me when I can consider like my best, maybe what 4 years ago, especially if we're going through a state, what does that version think of me today? And I thought this was really interesting too. Well, I love this saying, because I do want to bring it back to children and the children's book, but part of another theme in our book is about being kind. We posit the question, is it better to be right or be kind? Because often we do things, we hold our hearts back. We are not empathetic. We are not compassionate because we think that person did something wrong and we know better. And therefore, we're going to teach them a lesson. We're going to be right rather than be kind. But as the saying goes, be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a battle you know nothing about. And research actually shows that developing empathy in children can lead to longer and stronger relationships and increased emotional intelligence and less bullying. So if we think about even for our own children, right, it's such an important thing for them to see so that they can mirror. And oddly enough, you know, as adult relationships, adults and their children, like parents and their children when they're older, it seems that that empathy is less and less very often. Because
as they get older, you're saying?
Yeah. Because roles change. I mean,
from parent to child.
And sometimes child to parent.
Yeah, there's more disappointment, probably.
Well, a parent can be disappointed, time, but yeah. I think also the, if child. You look at the other side, when a parent gets much older, children can be really confused or disappointed by the behavior, right? Because they're not understanding it. But again, especially in these moments, it's so important to say, okay, I know this person's soul. I love them. I may not understand the behavior, but let me stop and think about all the other things that are existing in their lives, their wants, their desires, their disappointments. How would I feel if I were them? And I, again, at any time, and I do this a lot, when I'm confused by somebody's behavior, whether it's somebody close to me or somebody not close to me, I really, really, I will take a moment and like really think about this so that I can open my heart. So I told you I was going to tell you the difference between empathy, sympathy, and compassion. Empathy means you feel what the person's feeling.
Okay.
Sympathy means you can understand what the person's feeling, a feeling of pity or sorrow for someone else's suffering.
So sympathy is more on the pity side.
Yeah, sympathy is not fantastic. I don't like sympathy. I've never liked sympathy, and that's why I want to bring it up. Yeah. I remember, like, especially after I gave birth to Josh, I could tell, like, right away.
You were getting a lot of sympathy.
Yeah, and I was like, this is not, you're not helping me get good with this, you know, like this is a blessing I need to figure out. And every time I was like, oh,
so it's more ego based. It's more ego based.
Yeah. And it has a tinge of like,
I'm better than you or poor you.
No, I'm so happy I'm not you. It's like the opposite of empathy. I think really that's what it feels like to the receiver. And then compassion is a combination of both sympathy and empathy, with the willingness to relieve the suffering of another. I like that word a lot.
So it brings it closer to action, actually to do something about it.
Right.
So I think we can get rid of sympathy and put and focus on
for
empathy
sure. But
and
I think it's important to define it so people can, they might think they're being empathetic and not realize that they're actually being sympathetic. And that doesn't right. feel good to the
That's
receiver.
That's a very good point. Because I think a lot of people, exactly, who are, and we know a few people like this, I mean, I'm sure we all do, who love having sympathy for other people, but will not spend the time to have compassion or empathy.
Right. And I can tell you, because having had received that really in high doses at the time, it made me, and I think I can speak for probably others, it made me feel very lonely.
Interesting.
It did the opposite of maybe what the intention right. was. I don't know why people say what they say, but that's really, I was like, oh my God, you know, is this really that bad? You know, like it made it worse, in fact. So I have three tools for helping ourselves and our children model this kind of behavior. So the first is, so these are the tools to become and practice empathy, to kind of cultivate that. Model empathetic behavior. Children learn by observing the adults in their lives. I love that quote that said, children have never been very great at listening to their parents, but they've never failed at imitating them, right? So they may not appear that they're listening, but they're definitely watching. And we have opportunities all day long to mirror that kind of behavior. And one of my proudest stories, I'm not saying this to make myself look good, although I did do that.
You look good at it. You do look good.
But I remember a few years ago, I think Miriam was with us too. Yeah, I took Miriam and Abigail to 16 Handles frozen yogurt. And I got them their frozen yogurt. We were sitting at a booth and these three teenage kids walked in and they were like going nutso with samples. Like, It's just not hygienic. It was like before COVID also, but they had little sample cups and they kept refilling them. They were going to town, like trying every flavor. And the woman working there was getting very, very irritated, but she wasn't kind about it. And she belittled them. To me, it was apparent that they didn't have money to buy the yogurt. And she said, you do this, you come here and you do this, just get out of the store. And I thought as they walked out, ashamed, right? And I thought there's a better way to do this. Like, why make them feel badly? And, you know, clearly they really want the yogurt. So I did what I often do. I left the kids, but Miriam was a little bit older. I'm like, I'll be right back. And I ran after them. And I said, please let me buy you some yogurt. And they're like, really? I was like, yeah. And I said, please. And so it was really interesting. One boy like loaded his up to like the very like overflowing with topping, but it gave me so much joy. Another boy just did a normal yogurt. The other one put very little. And I was like, no, please take it. And then when they walked out, and this is the thing, they walked out, they looked at the girls and they're like, your mom is awesome. She's the best. But it wasn't even that. I looked at their faces, our daughters, and their eyes lit up and they sat up straighter. And I could tell that that was like an imprint for them of who to become or to offer kindness. And beautiful. So it's not,
I don't think
even,
I've ever heard the story.
Oh, it's one of my like favorite memories.
It's beautiful.
I still remember that boy, the boys. Yeah. They were like, and they were so excited. They're like dancing out the store because they had their yogurt, you know?
So I think it's a really important point. I think parents should ask themselves the question, when was the last time your children saw you and registered you being empathetic? I think the scene is really important. Again, not to make it dramatic, but I think that, like you said, that really imprints.
Yeah. And I was saying, like, you know, get a medium, get a large, you know. The second one is encourage perspective taking. So and this is a sad truth, our default is the tendency to think that we're the most important person in existence. And again, nobody wants to think that, but that is the reality. A natural kind of self-centeredness, a concern only for oneself. And it's not ideal, but there's no experience that you've had that you're not the absolute center of. Other people's thoughts have to be communicated to you, but your own thoughts and feelings are immediate, urgent, and real to you. So it's only natural to interpret everything you experience through the lens of self, because that is what we have access to all day. So how do we expect children to model a behavior where we're thinking about others? So for instance, and again, they're always watching. You're at the bank and you lose your patience with the teller who keeps forgetting what you just told them. And you react and just remember, they're watching, right? You mutter under your breath at the man in front of you in line who can't get his credit card to work or doesn't have enough cash or whatever it is. They're watching. So if you just remember those three words, they are watching. And every interaction, even let's say your children aren't there, pretend that they are, or somebody that you really admire, whether it's your teacher or your guru or whoever you care about, they're watching, right? At least, and again, I never say to focus on external, but I think it could be a really good reminder to get us to where we need to be. And the third is promote kindness and altruism. So encouraging kindness can significantly boost empathy because it's really the beginning of being empathetic. So create opportunities for children to help others, like volunteering. Part of what we're doing with Tale of the Other Glove is we're giving out gloves to people who are coming for Rosh Hashanah. And we're asking everybody to give a glove to somebody who needs it.
A pair of gloves.
A pair. Yes, not one glove.
A what
pair
do you mean?
We're not going to be too literal as the story is, but yes, a pair of gloves. So when you start to already make that something that they look for, right, of how to give and how to be kind and how to offer to people who need, they will become empathetic people and adults. And research from the Journal of Experimental Psychology suggests that participating in altruistic activity increases feeling of empathy and connection for others. And I think just even discussing this impact with our children, and they know who they're going to become if they start to act in these ways, is really like such a big first step.
Absolutely. The only thing I will add two things. One is, once again, you can take this moment to pause the podcast, go to Amazon.com and buy many copies of Tale of the Other Glove for yourself, your family, and anybody you care for. And second, I think, and I always like to take it back to, I don't know if the word is, you know, self, but, you know, one of my favorite teachings about Moses, many of us know the biblical Moses, a great teacher, a great leader, a great prophet. But in you always have to assess the starting point. Like, what was the key element that made him great? And the story in the Torah and the Bible makes it very clear. in the biblical story, Moses is, because he's living in the house of Pharaoh, he's not subjugated as a slave, as his brethren are, the rest of the Israelites. But it says, and I always remember these words in the original, in the ancient Hebrew, Vayar besivlotam, which means he literally took out an hour, a few hours a day to look at the pain that his brethren were going through. And it says he literally, the words of the commentators say, he put his eyes in his heart to focus and internalize their pain. That's what made him great.
I love
so
that.
If you want to be great, you want your children to be great, the foundation is empathy. The more empathetic you take the time to be, meditating your eyes and your heart on empathy for others, the greater you will become in life.
I love that, eyes in the heart.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So thank you, Monica, for sharing. And again, everybody go by, tell the other glove, for yourself, for your kids. It truly is a great and important lesson. As we just said now, maybe the most important lesson in life. And I hope you continue to enjoy these snacks until we come back with full episodes.
Very soon.
Very soon. We hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast as much as we enjoyed recording it.
Stay spiritually hungry.